Hello, and thank you for joining us on this episode of The Dev Team. I'm Mark Onsman.
I'm Daryl Kilzer.
And I'm Jake Overall.
We're a group of developers and bootcamp instructors here to help you in joining the world as a software developer. Whether you're a self-taught developer, bootcamp grad, or a CS student, we're here to help you fill in some of the knowledge you need to grow in your role as a junior developer.
In this week's episode of The Dev Team, Daryl gets us looking good with the word of the week, UX UI. In the news, I'll talk about a game that rose from the dead during the pandemic, and lastly, Jake will bring it home with the definition of done.
All right. Yeah. So this week I wanted to choose kind of two words, not just one word. And it's important because I think the two kind of work closely together, but it's sometimes hard to understand the difference. And I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in this area by any means. I'm going to kind of lay out a little bit of a definition of what I think about it. And then I'm going to ask you guys kind of your opinion on it. So UX or is user experience. And so this really pertains to all of the click-through and how a product works, okay? How the user is able to interact with it, and in general, how easy it is to use. There's quite a few different takes on this, and there's a lot of research that goes into it. Sometimes it's more about usability. Sometimes it's more about how simple something is to use. UI is the user interface. And this pertains specifically to, you know, color themes, things of that nature, how someone might feel about an app and what you're trying to guide them towards, right? Delete buttons are red, right? Because they present, hey, this thing that you're going to do is potentially a negative action. And that's kind of my take on it. Pretty simple, pretty standard. So what do you guys think?
I think that UX UI and kind of the philosophy around it is actually super intimidating for myself. I think that kind of what you mentioned there, and maybe it's truthfully my inner struggle, is that I haven't really taken the time and energy and effort to put enough into it. But it's intimidating because it feels like, okay, I'm doing psychology and now I have to understand, you know, color theory and all this. And so I very much, when it comes to these types of things, feel that imposter syndrome. But at the same token, I think that they're fascinating in that, oh man, I didn't realize how much better it would be if I put, you know, these menu options on the left instead of the right. Or what was the thought process? Like you mentioned the delete buttons being red, but like alerts having the little badge icon with a notification that's a little red dot. People intrinsically see that dot and they become like, oh, I better look at this thing. And so if you want to draw attention that way, sharp corners on boxes versus rounded, I think there's just so much to it that it can be really intimidating for anyone.
Yeah, I would agree for sure. You know, UX, UI, I just kind of group them together because I often don't know which one to actually, you know, categorize or classify. And, you know, I'm showing my lack of experience there. But I think one of the things that's really neat about UX and UI is there's a concept of building a persona, like who is your user? And for particular users, you want to have different options. And so I think a lot of that comes down to really identifying what is your user. You know, is this a 80-year-old woman? And how does your app work differently for someone of that persona as opposed to, you know, a young 20-year-old? And there's just different things that you should be able to look at and very quickly identify. And so I think one of the things that's really nice about modern application development is the ability to actually target those different personas and deliver a completely different experience, which I think is what really comes down to kind of the UX side of things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you both had some really good points, but circle back on Mark's there for a minute. I also have that same kind of intimidation. And I think a big part of it is, you know, that is a whole field in itself. Like it is a whole job description, a whole specialty, even just UX or just UI themselves, right? There's a lot of research that goes into that and a lot of time and energy and effort there. And to kind of talk on what Jake was saying too, I think that persona is key. That is one of the things that I have carried over from game development is early on I learned if I make a game that, you know, I take this little piece from this other game and this little piece from this other game, I just make a game that no one truly enjoys, but only enjoys small pieces of. And so you always want to build your app with someone in mind for sure. I often, you know, enjoy all the little menus and all the little options I can pick, and having them all on the same screen is great for me. But I found that a lot of users, I usually use my wife in this case, I'll give an application to her and she's like, okay, you have just way too many options here, way too many things to think about. I want to think on one of these topics and make a selection and then move on.
I think you see this in even like products, right? Look at like the big debates between something like an iPhone versus an Android. And for a long time, and I know they've kind of grown together a lot more, but originally it kind of was that was the big difference, is iPhones offered this idea of simplicity. There's not a lot of customization beyond like wallpaper and stuff like that. It's a little bit smaller, more limited app store, and it just kind of worked. Again, I'm talking like way back. It's definitely grown, but it just kind of worked and it was simple and it was straightforward and there wasn't a lot of customization involved. Whereas Android was on the flip side of that. It had a lot of customization. You could even like root your phone and, you know, completely install completely different operating systems and things like that. And so they definitely drew that different type of personality, that different type of person, versus somebody wants that sleek, simple, straightforward design, and someone wants large customization. And I think you have to potentially find what your market is. And my opinion, and I could be certainly wrong here, I find it better to stick with that market and not try and find that, like you said, halfway balance between the two, because then everyone, your app is meh, as opposed to like really liked by some people and just not liked by others. Everyone kind of has this lukewarm feeling about it.
I think another one of the things that you really have to focus on is understanding the device that your app is going to be used on, right? Or if your app is, you know, PWA, right? The kid throwback to last week. But, you know, if you have potential desktop users and mobile users, the UX between those two needs to be different. The device itself can kind of dictate some of the design decisions and, you know, some of the workflow and some of the layout, and being able to customize that to individual devices is just as important as understanding the persona, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have a desktop, you have a lot of space, a lot of real estate, you can put a lot of options there and it doesn't feel cluttered. If you do that same thing with the mobile device, okay, now it becomes very hard to see what's what and actually use this thing. It was funny, Mark, that you happened to mention the iPhone and the Android. As you know, I have that Android with the two screens. I love both of my screens and all my configurations I can do. And my wife has the iPhone. And every time I go to try to use it, you know, to connect to the Wi-Fi or something, I'm like, all right, how do I go back? Just click the middle button. Okay, how do I bring up your menu? Just hold the middle button. Okay, so I've got this option here. How do I select it? Oh, just click the middle button. Okay, so you just do the middle button for everything and it just somehow works. It's funny.
I think that, yeah, there's a lot of kind of design that goes into stuff like that. And I congratulate developers who are able to kind of figure that out, whether it's, you know, hardware or software, and to say, hey, you know what, let's put one button on there and solve all the problems with that one button. Like, that's a feat. That's challenging to get good user experience for that, but they were able to do it. So what I would say, though, is what experiences have you guys had, or what tools or tips or tricks or things have you found to help you in this space?
I lean on YouTube, and there's a course, it's called a design course, or a guy, I think his name Gary Simon, I think is what it is, does an excellent job of just kind of talking through different like UI, UX. He clarifies the difference between the two when he's talking about it. It's very much his profession and within his wheelhouse. So, you know, there's a kick out to him for that. I've used his courses on YouTube for a long time. There's also, and I don't remember who the author is, but there's a refactoring UI. I think it's a Twitter stream, truth be told. And a guy just posts images daily and he shows, you know, a good design and a bad design right next to each other for the exact same thing, right? And so, like, here's a card or here's a list and you're overusing lines, and here you should be using more white space and things of that nature. Like, it's just little quick tips and tricks for how to make it look better. And so those are the two resources that I generally will go and look at. The other thing that I would throw out there is, you know, if you're going to be building a mobile app or something of that nature, pick a design platform, something that's, you know, tried, tested, proven type of idea. Google has published the Material Design, right? They call them design frameworks. So pick one of those, learn the rules of it, and then just force yourself to follow those rules every single time, and your stuff's going to turn out better. I'm not going to say it's perfect, right? But it's going to turn out at least better.
Yeah, I would say I have to second kind of some of that. I use specifically ColorMind.io, It's an AI-powered color palette picker. You're able to click on colors that they've randomly generated, lock them in, and then generate new ones in between. And I slowly come to a color pattern that I like that are all complementary or work well together. Other than that, I use what's called Figma. And a lot of times I'll bring in specifically themes or templates from some professional designer. And usually they have pretty good UX with them. And I pay attention to the examples that they have used because they keep it very simple and clean. And then I just kind of adhere to those same rules for my application.
Yeah, the other one I know I've seen kind of building up in popularity to echo on Refactor, because I think it's the same people, is Tailwind CSS. Implements a lot of those things. I haven't necessarily used it, but I definitely have used, like Daryl said, I look at it and see, okay, what are they doing here? And maybe why are those certain decisions in place? Yeah, find those people on Twitter, find them on Instagram. There's other, the only other website I use with a lot of frequency, and it's more of a dashboard of finding tools, is the sansfrancisco.co. It's like San Francisco, but it's a .com. Co, and it's sans, like Comic Sans, I guess.
Oh my goodness.
Sanskrit. And so that one's a good kind of platform. It's got a bunch of different stuff from, you know, stock images and color palette pickers and iconography and fonts and, you know, whatever. So there's a lot of different tooling that's available there as well. All right. Well, I guess that's me then to jump on with the news. So I kind of was looking around at a couple different things, and I actually ran across a post this year, and it's kind of summarizing video games throughout the course of the year and like what's been popular and what's been trending like at the beginning of the year up until now. And it very much reflected kind of the state of the pandemic and quarantine and isolation throughout the time. So do you guys remember what was like super popular at the beginning of the year?
I believe that's Animal Crossing.
100%.
Sure.
Animal yeah, Crossing.
Animal Crossings for yep. The win.
Everyone was playing Animal Crossing, and it was super like, okay, yeah, we're going to have this island and we're going to work together and collaborate with other people. And, you know, it's really fun to be on an island and it's all fun and joy. Whereas now our idea of isolation is everyone gets together and is locked in this spaceship and one person in the group is trying to kill all of you.
Sometimes, so,
of course,
too.
I'm talking about Among Us.
Yeah, of course, Among Us, right? Like such a fun game. Ridiculously like simplistic. Right, talk about UI UX, right? Like a super simple game, but so fun, so fun.
So if you haven't had the chance to play Among Us, basically the concept is you join into a room with a group of up to, I think it's up to 10 people. And essentially among those 10 people, you can identify a certain number of people as essentially traitors, right? And if you ever watch Battlestar Galactica, kind of that same, they're the Cylon or, you know, whatever, right? It's a common theme in games like One Night Werewolf or whatever. And so that one person or those two people or however many imposters you choose have to basically sabotage the ship and kill everyone on it. Meanwhile, everyone else is trying to fix the ship and get it operational, and then basically, they find that dead body, or they can call an emergency meeting and you kick somebody off the ship. And you hope that as the crew, you can find the imposters before everyone's dead or the ship blows up, or as, you know, the imposters, the inverse of that. So, yeah, not a huge game logic. And in fact, did you guys actually know that this game's been out since 2018?
I'm sorry, it's been out since 2018?
Yeah. So
was it just published?
No, it was originally published in 2018, and it actually was hardly popular at all. It kind of fluttered down there, you know, and again, I say hardly popular at all. It's outsold many of the games I've made myself in that window of time. But essentially, it actually reached a point where the developers, which is actually, it's a group of three people from who's being credited for it. So the one person individually as the developer, and then people who helped with animations and assets, but the developer was kind of had reached a point where he's like, cool, I'm done. We're going to go ahead and retire this. It's stable at this point and I'm going to let it go. And then the pandemic hit and everything changed. And I feel like I just started like, and then the Fire Nation attacked because his servers lit up at that point. Basically, a YouTube streamer had run a stream on it and was talking about it, and people being isolated jumped in on it and it just blew up.
That's the game is so much fun, but speaking from like a technology standpoint, it's interesting to have a project that essentially died, you said, 2 years ago.
Two years. So it was basically fluttered around pretty low numbers for 2 years and then has taken off since.
Yeah. This is something that I kind of read up on. You know, it's an indie game dream team, right? A couple artists and a developer. But yeah, it kind of, you know, floundered a few times, and then they'd have a surge, and then they'd go, okay, it's not quite dead yet. Let's go add some new features. And then it'd drop off again and then come back again. But nothing of significance until, like Mark said, the pandemic. So it's very interesting how that kind of plays out in the game industry sometimes.
Yeah, I can only imagine, like, you know, you're paying maybe $10 a month for a server fee or whatever, right? And all of a sudden your server starts crashing. You're like, what's going on? Like, I trying to put myself in the shoes of that developer. I imagine, was he getting pings? Because a lot of this was just downloaded from the Play Store, right? It was free. Or, like, you know, we have games on Steam, and it's not like I get a notification every single time someone buys one. So I wonder if it was just like he woke up one day and it's like, oh, the server's down.
Oh, that's odd.
Like, the server load is hitting millions of people right now. Like, yeah, could you imagine?
It said basically he picked it up one day and was going to go work on it and kind of do little tiny little bug fixes, and all of a sudden noticed he had 10,000 plus players attempting to hit the server all at once. And yeah, and so his server was basically exactly that going down. And so it's several weeks of 12-hour days later, he was able to kind of repair it and build it. But, it, you know, if anything, it talks to the credit of build your applications to be potentially ready for that, because he's in kind of interviews and things like that. The developer had indicated that, and it, Willard is the name I was able to find on that, he basically found that this code is not architected when we originally wrote it to be sustainable at this level. And so, yeah, it really speaks volumes to being able to build applications that can be scalable, because a lot of that 12-hour time was, I need to rewrite large portions of this backend to actually support this server load.
Right, and that is the worst time in the world to have to do huge refactorings, is right as the app is starting to boom and starting to scale, right? Like, so yeah, that definitely is not an ideal situation. And, you know, but to speak to, I guess the credit here is, you know, sometimes you build something to get it done, right? You publish it, you put it out there, see what users like, and based upon user feedback, you add more features or you tweak things and you do this, that, or the other, right? But speaking from like a server architecture level, it's important to nail those things right away, because you just never know.
Yeah, can you imagine sitting down and, okay, I think I know what's wrong with the server. For some reason, the user count has 6 extra zeros on it.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily know like how many, I wasn't able to find how many downloads it has on Steam, but as far as reviews, there are about almost 200,000 reviews, and at $5 a pop, you know, that's a lot. Like, I wasn't able to find any kind of actual financial numbers on how much he's made, but that's also kind of that dream situation of like, oh, cool, I released this thing, and right now it's $5, $4.99 on Steam, and, you know, whatever, right? Side project. It was fun. We sustained it for a while, but we're going to go ahead and turn it over. And then the next day you're like, hey, what are we going to do with $500,000?
Well, and you got to think, on the Play Store, there's over 100 million plus downloads, and all those ads and that ad revenue, that's got to be pretty significant.
Ad revenue and microtransactions, because you can buy clothes and different things.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The store.
I think it's a fun testament to that whole, like, just because the app isn't gaining a ton of progress when you first release it, it doesn't mean that you don't have a good idea, right? Like, the game that you've built might be fun, and it might be the perfect style of game, and it might not do anything, right? And sometimes you just need that YouTube streamer or, you know, get it on Twitch to have it actually take off, right? And so I think that's just kind of one of those things where, you know, it shows the power and importance of good marketing and, you know, good design decisions when you launch, as to how are you going to get this out to the masses, right? Among Us, again, excellent game, a ton of fun. But yeah, apparently did nothing for like 2 full years and then just exploded, right? So I think that's one of those things that, you know, as the developer, like, have heart, right? Like, have heart, you know, have confidence that what you've built is good.
I think that, yeah, you also want to make sure you don't fall into that survivor bias, right? There are apps you're going to build that are amazing and maybe not ever really take notice. And that's a bummer, but don't let that get you down too much, because, you know, it could be the next one that takes off, or it could be the one after that. Or it could be that really one you barely spent any time on at all, but people think is funny, that just blows up. Or something originally fairly simple that slowly builds over time. Look at Cookie Clicker. Cookie Clicker is another good example of this type of game where it's fairly originally something that didn't have maybe a massive amount of coding to get it to work. But that's on Patreon, Cookie Clickers at like $2,000 a month. That's the dream for sure.
So what I'm hearing is my Play Store games that have 50 downloads still have a chance. It's only been 3 years.
There's still a chance. Still a chance, yes.
All right. Well, that's it for the news this week.
So I think that's going to kick me over straight into, and it's funny because the topics just kind of bleed into each other quite well. But I want to talk about the dreaded, you know, definition of done. Right. And if you've done any type of, you know, Scrum, Agile environment, that's a common phrase is thrown around. But the definition of done is kind of that concept of, you know, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it right. And I think that that's one of those things that is really hard, especially as you're first entering the workforce as a junior developer. You're trying to submit a pull request. You're trying to, you know, fix bugs. You're trying to, you know, get your code into production, right? And sometimes that pull request gets denied. And there's usually a reason for it. And whether it's code quality, whether it's maintainability, there's usually something that says, this is not actually ready to hand off. And so I ask you guys, what is your code quality? What is your standard in being able to say, I wrote this thing, it's a feature, it's feature complete, I'm done. How do you get to that point? I'm just shaking. Well, what you don't see is they're shaking their heads.
It's that dreaded definition of done.
Yeah. So I'll jump in. So basically for me, it's like you said, the code quality and kind of setting those bars for yourself. And sometimes it's not for yourself. Sometimes it's set by somebody else and it says, you know, it must have this amount of code coverage in your testing. It must have this amount of, you know, tests passing. It has to meet these linter requirements. It has to meet, you know, so on and so forth. But one of the things for me is really in my experiences and working through the Scrum process and whatnot, I have found that the definition of done is incredibly hard to nail down for the full application. Looking at an application at 30,000 feet and saying, okay, this app is done when XYZ. It's much easier to, when you're first starting with this approach, is to narrow it down to kind of like you're saying, that single pull request, that single feature, that single tiny little box. And this is the idea of, again, kind of that Scrum process is we keep everything in tiny little boxes and those boxes slowly build together until we have a full application. So for a definition of done to me, it involves what are the feature sets? Does it meet all the user stories? And then again, that code quality when it comes to linting and testing and code coverage around those tests and things of that nature. And depending on the shop you're in, sometimes you're writing those tests. Sometimes it's somebody else writing the tests and you're writing the code. So that starts to really get niche into what is your company's layout. But for me, that's the biggest stuff.
Yeah, I could say, you know, I always have this kind of ideal definition of done that you could go for. But realistically, I tried to take a realistic approach and go, okay, well, what kind of race is this? Is this a 100-meter dash? Is this a quick jog around the track? Or is this a marathon or 2 miles? And then really kind of pull some of that in there. Well, ideally, we would have testing, but this is going to be a fairly quick little application that's not going to be used for too much. I'm going to forgo that, okay? I don't really need to write in all that robustness there. It just doesn't make sense to do that, right? And so it's definitely going to be a matter of what is the intended or expected lifespan of this app and what's it actually for? Kind of defining that persona of what my user actually is.
Yeah, so take Among Us as a perfect example there, right? Like, definition done. Hey, I'm building a game for my friends, buddies, you know, maybe a couple hundred people. And so I'm going to forego the tests. I'm going to not worry about, you know, a server load more than 1,500 people or something of that nature, right?
Scalable? Who needs that?
Who needs scalability? And I think, you know, to talk about what Mark was saying, the importance of being able to really put features into little boxes, right? If you take an entire painting all at once, right, or you ask an artist, is your painting done? A lot of times, and I think this leans to the creative side of software development, when you're building something that doesn't exist already, you're creating it, you're crafting it, you're putting it together, it's really hard to be able to say, yeah, I'm done. That is the perfect application. That is the perfect painting. Like, I don't know any artist or any developer who will say, my painting's done or my application is done. But I think if you focus on the smaller little features, it's this is feature complete. That's one part of the painting or, you know, application that I don't need to revisit because it's good how it is.
I think you touched on a very kind of specific word there for me too, and that's feature complete. Because if you look at something like, you know, let's look at a crazy big app, right? We're not just talking about a painting. We're talking about a building full of paintings now. But like Google. Google is never done. The product that is Google isn't done because there's everything from Google Maps to Google Docs to Google APIs, flights, all these different things. And so, you know, you have to look at those individual features. Don't ever try and look at your entire app and say, yeah, the whole app's done, because that's like dang near impossible with some of these bigger apps. Now, again, like Daryl said, if it's a smaller app and it has like one job, it's essentially a single feature app type of situation. Great. You can get that feature done. But that's where you have to kind of say, okay, am I maintaining this? Like the Among Us folks, you know, this is my application. It's my game. I'm managing it. Or am I handing it off to a client? And then I can cut those ties.
Yeah, this is my current feature set for this MVP for now. I think that's what you realistically have to do. That's the only definition of done that you can really use is here's my MVP right now. This is what I'm going for. This is where I'm going to draw a line. And if I decide to continue, I will look at that and evaluate that and draw the next finishing point.
I think that's one of the things that's nice about like video games today, right? Or just applications today. And I think the end user is starting to get used to the concept of versioning, right? Like I have application version 1.0. I have game version whatever, right? And if you look at, you know, Call of Duty or any of the games that have been published recently, you have version numbers that are, there's 15 numbers, you know, in that version. And, you know, that's part of that. There's things to fix. There's things to improve upon. And what I really want to key into right there is sometimes a version change is not because the application is broken, but it's that the needs have changed. And so the features need to change. It wasn't necessarily that that feature had a bug or that feature was broken or that feature didn't work. Sometimes it was just simply the way that we built the feature wasn't the way that the user wanted to actually use it. Right? And so sometimes that's hard to clarify those differences. And what I think, you know, one of the important things about that sign off of, am I done, is more along the lines of, from the developer standpoint, is my code readable? Is it maintainable? Is it something that I can hand to anyone else on my team and they're not going to get lost in the sauce?
I think it's, yeah, it comes back to done for now, right? Like you said, the biggest changes that we've made, and we talked about this a little bit last week, and you were talking to Daryl about, you know, oh, how much easier or how much harder was it to develop when we had limitations in games, right? If you released Mario, right, and it's on a cartridge, you send those out to the stores, you're done. That game better work. There's no updates. There's no patching it. That's it. Whereas in modern game development or in modern applications, we can continually, that continuous integration idea, we can continually update and continue to edit. So it comes back to, is this feature done for now? Can I not, if this application made no further changes, is it functioning without bugs? Yes, great. We have tests in place to handle everything, to cover everything as we continue to build out, and that this feature, if it never comes back or never needs to be updated, it's fine. Good, cool. Let's move on. But then down the road, like you said, things change. We can still come back to it. All right. Well, I think we will go ahead and wrap up that conversation there, and that will end this week's episode of The Dev Team. I want, again, once to thank everyone for listening in to us. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, please like or subscribe it on your favorite podcasting network. And until we see you again, happy coding.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Dev Team. If you're interested in learning more about our team or possibly starting a career in software development, reach out to us at boisecodeworks.com. Follow us on Facebook and like and subscribe to this podcast to continue to receive the latest updates. Until then, from The Dev Team, remember, if you want clean code, wash your hands.